Matthew chapter 5, you probably remember that Jesus went up into the mountain, right? That's why it's called the Sermon on the Mount. Makes sense. And His disciples followed Him there. Take a look at Matthew chapter 5 and verse 1. It says, "And seeing the multitudes, He went up into the mountain. And when He was set, His disciples came unto Him." And if that's all we had, we might think that the disciples were the only ones there. But when we get to the end of the sermon in chapter 7 and verse 28, we find out that the people were astonished at His doctrine. So I suppose that Jesus took His disciples up into the mountain. He probably set them down in the front row, and the multitudes fell in behind the disciples. And when you think about it, what a glorious day this must have been for those who came to church, you see, for those that came to church on this day, to sit there in the presence of Almighty God. Everyone here understands that Jesus is Almighty God. He's called the Everlasting Father in the book of Isaiah. But what a glorious day this would have been to sit at the feet of Jesus and to be instructed, to hear the very words of God out of the very mouth of God, to hear lofty preaching like they had never heard before. And at the end of the day, it says that they were absolutely astonished. It says in Matthew 7, 28 and 29, "And it came to pass when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at His doctrine. For He taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes." But when we look at our text for this morning, we want to consider Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. And it says in verse 13, "Ye are the salt of the earth." We want to consider, first of all, those to whom Jesus is speaking. Who is Jesus speaking to when He says "ye" here, you see? Pardon? The disciples and the multitude that He seems to be preaching to. You wouldn't know this from just reading the English translation, but the word "ye" is a plural "ye." So He's not speaking to one person. He's speaking to a multitude of people, or many people. If Jesus had been from the south, He would have probably said, "Y'all are the salt of the earth," right? So it's a plural "ye." Of course, the disciples were there. They were probably immediately at the feet of Jesus. And Jesus certainly had them in mind when He said, "Ye are the salt of the earth." Jesus must have certainly had Peter and James and John and Andrew and the others in mind when He said, "Ye are the salt of the earth." And of course, if Judas was there, I'm sure Jesus was excluding him. Judas was part of the earth that needed salting. And I suppose that Jesus also looked out beyond the disciples and found in this multitude that there were some who were also the salt of the earth. There were some sheep in the crowd whom the Father had chosen. There were some whom the Father had given to Christ for the purpose of redemption. We've covered all of this often, haven't we? There were some there for whom Jesus would lay down His life for an atonement. There were some who would be changed by the power of God and made into a new creation. And to those, Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth." But there were undoubtedly others who were there just to be healed of their infirmities. A lot of people followed Jesus because they were sick. They wanted to get close enough to Him and maybe they would be healed. There were some there that just wanted to be fed. They were hungry and they wanted bread and fishes. And they were there to see some miracles. Some of them were. They were curious. And they wanted to see what Jesus would do next. But sadly, many of these people would eventually go away. They would go back to their homes, go back to their sins, and they would go back to their rotting way of life. They were standing there for a moment in front of the great light, but they would leave at the end of the day and go back into darkness. Some of them were not among the elect of God, and Jesus would not commit Himself to them in a saving way. He did this on one occasion in John chapter 2 and verse 24. So Jesus wasn't speaking to the unbelievers when He said, "Ye are the salt of the earth," but He was speaking to believers. He was speaking to the sheep. He was speaking to Christians. And He told them, "Ye are the salt of the earth." I wish everyone would believe the gospel, don't you? I wish everyone would commit in faith to Jesus Christ. I wish people wouldn't just walk away in unbelief. I wish people didn't love the world more than they love Christ, but they do. I wish people didn't love this world more than heaven. I wish people didn't love the kingdoms of this world more than the kingdom of heaven. But they do. I wish they didn't love the riches of this world more than the riches of heaven. And Jesus must have looked out over the multitude with a good bit of sorrow, perceiving that many would reject Him. Maybe most of them walked away from Jesus that day, astonished but uncommitted. But there were some. There's always some, you see. And there were some that day who were the first fruits of a great new thing. In them was the seed of a great new institution. And this institution, of course, is called the church. Jesus would eventually send these 11 disciples out into the world to preach the gospel and to set up a new way of worship. And so I suppose that Jesus made special eye contact with these 11 disciples, even as He was speaking to the whole multitude. Most of the Beatitudes that we've just studied began with the words, "Blessed are they." Look at Matthew 5 and verse 4. It says in Matthew 5, 4, "Blessed are they that mourn." And then in verse 6, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness." And verse 10, "Blessed are they which are persecuted." But beginning in verse 11, Jesus says, "Blessed are ye." And our text for this morning says, "Ye are the salt of the earth and ye are the light of the world." It's a subtle change of subject. And it appears that Jesus transitioned from the general to the particular. Now, you remember, I hope you remember a few weeks ago when we preached here, we preached, "It is good to be merciful." Do you remember? And the congregation thinks to themselves, "Yes, that's a very good general principle. But then if I look at someone in the front row, like Brother Dana up here this morning, and I say, 'It's good if you are merciful,' it becomes much more personal, doesn't it?" And notice what Jesus says in verse 13. He says, "Ye are the salt of the earth." The "ye" here, as I said, is plural. Jesus was speaking to a group of people. This would not be true of the whole multitude, though. Surely the multitude was a mixture of lost and saved. And those who are lost are not the salt of the earth, and neither are they the light of the world. But these words of Jesus would apply directly to those who were His people. In particular, they would apply in this context to those who were blessed with salvation. He has just got through saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn." And then He says, "And ye are the salt of the earth. All of you who have been blessed are the salt of the earth. And especially it seems that Jesus was speaking to the immediate disciples who were sitting at His feet. These disciples, by the way, were the first members of the church. The first ones that Jesus called together when He began to initiate and create this new institution. They were the church in its infancy. Let me say here that Jesus was establishing a new institution. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, the old institution was the Jewish religion. The old institution was the one that was established by God through Moses. We talked about it some in Sunday school this morning. That old institution was a pre-Christ kind of institution. I hope everyone understands that about the Jewish religion. It was designed to be a pre-Christ way of worship. It had a lot of rituals that were designed to picture the person of Christ and to picture the work of Christ and to picture the things of Christ. It was an institution that said, Christ is coming. The Old Testament is kind of like someone standing outside with a giant megaphone shouting, Christ is coming! Christ is coming! But when Christ came, you see, that old institution gave way. That old institution came to a natural end. It was always designed to be a temporary institution until Christ Himself would come. And then that old institution gave way to a new institution. Now, I notice, at least I presume, that none of you brought your lambs here this morning to be offered for sacrifice. That is because that old institution is done away. Would you agree? We didn't have to fly to Jerusalem this morning to worship. Neither do we go there once a year for the Day of Atonement. We don't have human priests anymore. Why is that? It's because Jesus came and set up a new institution. And that new institution is the grand and glorious church of the New Testament. And in a sense, when Jesus said ye in the plural, He was speaking to all those who would be members of His great institution, the church. When Jesus said you are the salt of the earth, He also had an eye on us in 2016. 2,000 years later, He was speaking to you and me because we are the blessed of God in salvation. We are individuals, of course, but we're also an organized body. And we are organized for the purpose of glorifying God, for edifying one another, and as our text suggests, having an impact on the world. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world. Little did they know, sitting at Jesus' feet, that this new institution would be the greatest institution the world has ever seen. Jesus knew in His foresight, but the multitude didn't know. But I want you to just look what Jesus has done through His church and through His people. Jesus has extended His influence to the entire earth, hasn't He? Jesus is by far the most famous man that the world has ever known. And He has affected the world like no other. And He has done it through His people. He has done it through people like Peter and James and Andrew, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And He has done it through the lives of Christians down through the ages. And He continues to do it through people like you. Wonderful Christians like you is how Christ influences the world. So who was Jesus speaking to when he said, "You are the salt of the earth"? He was speaking to the 12. He was speaking to all of those in the audience who were saved by grace, and all those down through history who would seek entrance into the church and into His kingdom by faith. It is all of us who are Christians. We are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. But then we note also the universal scope of influence. Now, you probably have some sense that that old institution, that Jewish institution, was very much localized, wasn't it? It functioned in and around Jerusalem. You had to come to Jerusalem, ultimately, to worship. In fact, if you were a little lamb, that is the kind with four legs and wool, fleece, whatever you call it, you were probably all right if you lived in Syria or Egypt or any of the other nations of the world. But if you were a sheep in Jerusalem, your days were numbered. That's because the Old Testament institution was localized, you see. God didn't give these rules and rituals for the world to obey. But now with the coming in of Christ into the world, His influence will spread out far and wide. It's interesting that Christ did not say, "You are the salt of Jerusalem." He didn't say that. He didn't say, "You are the salt of the land of Canaan." But He said, "You are the salt of the earth, and you are the salt of the world." Under the Mosaic Covenant, as we saw this morning in Sunday school, Israel was a localized institution. But the church is a worldwide institution. It now extends beyond the walls of Jerusalem. It extends beyond the borders of Canaan. It extends beyond the Jewish race. That's why the Bible says in Galatians 3:28, there is neither Jew nor Gentile. The gospel of Jesus Christ goes far and wide. The gospel is not confined to any geographical area or to any nationality. But it is to have its effect on the earth and on the world. Now, this must have been a shock. It certainly was a shock to the Jewish system. No longer was the land of Canaan the only place of interest, but now the whole earth is the place. In our text for this morning, Jesus is expressing what effect Christians have on the world, and collectively, what effect the church has on the world. And it is a great effect indeed. I have the feeling that most of us doubt that we have much impact on the world at all. As Christians, we go about our business quietly from day to day. Hope you do. According to Jesus, we are poor in spirit. We go about mourning our sins. We are meek. We are peaceable. And we don't think that we have much impact. But not so according to Jesus. It appears that just by being in the world, Christians have a huge effect on it. Jesus didn't say, "Now I want you to go out tomorrow and be the salt of the earth." But He said, "You are the salt of the earth." Just by being here, you are the salt of the earth. Now, Jesus uses two analogies in our text for this morning to describe the impact of Christians on the world. First of all, Christians are the salt of the earth. And secondly, Christians are the light of the world. Now, you didn't think that you were that important, did you? When you came to church this morning, you didn't think that your presence in the world was much of a factor. But Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Wow. That's high praise. That's a very high condemnation for people such as a commendation for people such as us. And Jesus said that about you and about me. I want to emphasize here that Jesus does not limit His praise to the 12 disciples. He doesn't limit it to those who would go out into the world preaching the gospel. But He looked out over the multitude, and He included all those who never preached a sermon and all those who would never preach a sermon. When He said, "You are the salt of the earth," He was talking about you and me. He was talking about those of us who otherwise thought we were nothing. Mamas and daddies who labor raising children. Employees who labor in the workforce. Husbands and wives who edify and encourage one another. Children who obey their parents. To all of these and to every single Christian in this world, Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth." Each one of us in this congregation should understand that we are the salt of the earth. Jack Ray's not here this morning, but he's the salt of the earth. Dana Baker, the salt of the earth. Marion Himes, the salt of the earth. Where's Terry Moats? Even Terry Moats is the salt of the earth, isn't he? Even your lowly pastor is the salt of the earth. But you say, "I feel like such a foolish thing. I feel like such a weak thing in this world. I feel like such a low thing. I feel like my life amounts to very little in this world." And I would say yes, and these are the very ones who God uses to impact the world. Listen to what 1 Corinthians 1, 27 through 29 says. It says, "But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise." You see, it has an impact on the world. "And God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in His presence." You should remember that when Jesus spoke these words, He had just recently called His disciples to follow Him. He had just snagged most of them off of the fishing docks. And He tells them, "You are the salt of the earth." Peter must have looked at John and said, "Who, us?" They're just fishermen, you see, and crusty fishermen at that. "We are men of low estate," Peter must have said. "We are men of low impact on this world." And the people in the multitude must have looked at each other and said, "Who, us? I'm just a bare believer in Jesus, and a lowly one at that. Surely He doesn't mean me." But Jesus meant every single Christian. Every Christian is the salt of the earth. Every Christian is the light of the world. You have something in you that changes the world around you. So I want to take a look, first of all, at the first analogy. It says, "You are the salt of the earth." Now, in order to understand this analogy, we have to understand what salt meant to the people of that time. To us, of course, the main use of salt is to make something taste good, right? We put salt on almost everything, or at least I do. Probably shouldn't put as much as I do. But when I get French fries at McDonald's, I hate it when I drive away and then I realize that they forgot to put salt on the French fries. If I hadn't gone too far, I go back through the line and get a packet of salt for my French fries. It just doesn't taste good without salt. Salt on watermelon, salt on an apple, salt on a peach. And that's how we use salt. But in the days when Matthew wrote, salt was used primarily as a preservative. That's the first thing that would have come to their minds. Now, what do we use to preserve our meat? Refrigerator. The freezer. My wife comes home from the grocery store with all kinds of meat, and she plans to cook it in the next 2 or 3 weeks. You see, she has a roast, she has a pork chops, she has ground beef, she has chicken, and she just comes home and puts it in the freezer, and she takes it out in 2 or 3 weeks, and she cooks it. But if you came home from the market back then with a 2-week supply of meat, you better have a couple of bags of salt. That's how they preserved their food back then. So the most important feature of salt was as a preservative. And actually, this was the principal use of salt even up until the 20th century. You see, we haven't had refrigerators forever, just forever in our lifetime. But they didn't have it back then. So what does it mean that we are the salt of the earth? It means, first of all, that we are the preservative of the earth. Let me just put it in a very straightforward way. We are the ones who prevent the earth from rotting. The earth would putrefy and rot away without you and I in this world. Now, we don't often think of ourselves in this way. We tend to be humble people if we are Christians. We don't think that we have much of an impact, but Jesus thinks we have an impact. Jesus thinks that we prevent this present world from rotting. The underlying implication of this saying is that the world tends toward decomposition. And the world is actually rotting away. Jesus was under no illusion about the world apart from himself. When the world is left to itself, it festers and putrefies like a piece of meat left in the hot sun. The germs of evil are present everywhere in this world. Now, Brother Mark has taught us in Sunday school quite often that we need to have a biblical worldview. Would you agree? We need to get our worldview from the Bible. It is important for us to see the world as the Scriptures see the world. And the Scriptures see the world as a fallen place. The world was once a Garden of Eden, but it's now a cursed place. It was once a garden of fruit, but now it's just a garden of weeds. There is a decay that eats away at this world because of sin. This world is a dying place. Men die, animals die, plants die. It's just the way of this world because of sin. This sinful world is rotting away. It has been this way ever since Adam sinned against God. About 1,000 years after Adam sinned, God came and destroyed the whole earth with a flood. Only Noah and his family were saved from the flood. This is how rotten the world had become. But you know, the world repopulated, didn't it? Noah had children. Noah's children had children. And it's been a wonderful place ever since, hasn't it? No. Almost immediately, man fell into debauchery again, and the world continued to rot. And God rained down judgments on the world, such as Sodom and Gomorrah, which was destroyed by fire and brimstone in one day. Some people think that this rotting principle is somehow overcome by our modern culture. It's not like that anymore, is it? They think that we have become morally better today in the 21st century. Certainly we've become smarter. We've learned how to overcome this rotting principle, haven't we? But every time we think we have gotten a little better, the stench of this world rises up in our nostrils. Just turn on your news today and you'll find that the world is no better after all of these years. The biblical view is that the world is a cursed and a rotting world. That's why Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth." Now, let me tell you that you will not get this viewpoint from the universities. The professors there will tell you that we are learning how to be better. In the philosophy class, you will learn that society is on an upward trend. In the science class, you will learn that things are evolving upward. But I prefer to get my instruction from Professor Jesus, you see. And Professor Jesus says the world needs salt to keep it from rotting. Hence, we have the function of the Christian and the function of the Christian church. The Christian and the Christian church function as a retardant to decay. I am convinced that this world minus Christ and this world minus the Christian influence would absolutely rot away. Christians have a restraining influence in this world. Now, you all know me. I'm not a very outspoken person. I'm rather quiet and unassuming, aren't I? But sometimes at the golf course, you get paired up with strangers. You know, you go as a twosome and they pair you up with another twosome. And when you join up with strangers, you often hear a steady stream of foul language. And invariably, someone will ask, "Well, what do you do for a living?" And I'll say, "I'm the pastor of Grace Baptist Church." And you know what? I found the curse words usually dry up a little bit. I don't say one thing, and yet the whole flow of foul language tends to dry up. Look what one Christian in a foursome accomplishes. By the way, later, when they forget for a moment after hitting a bad shot, they say a bad word and look up and say, "Sorry." You see? I want to say, don't worry about what I think. There's someone there that you need to worry about what he thinks. But the same is true of you. Wherever you go, if they just know that you are a Christian, it has a restraining effect. They tend to save the dirty jokes for later. Look how one Christian changes the whole party, you see. Now, the Christian is not self-righteous. The Christian is not condemning, but his life makes ungodly conversation seem shabby and inappropriate. I want you to listen to this quote from R. Kent Hughes. I've got his book on the Sermon on the Mount. He says, quote, "I believe that Christians exert an incalculable influence on society. Their mere presence reduces crime, restrains ethical corruption, promotes honesty, quickens the conscience, and elevates the general moral atmosphere. The presence of such people in the military, in business, in education, in a fraternity or a sorority will amazingly elevate the level of living. And the absence of Christians will foster unbelievable depths of depravity," unquote. So what do we have to do to be a preserving influence? The indication is that we just have to be there. Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. There is something in you that will do it. There is a preserving quality to you. You see, you are a new creature in Christ. There is something different about you. And wherever you are, you will make a difference. In a home, in a family, in a marriage. Did you know that one Christian person in a family will make a world of difference? In the workplace, in the grocery store, on the golf course, the Christian influence is a very powerful thing. So as Christians, we are a preservative in a rotting world. But secondly, we are also a tasty spice in the earth. In ancient times, salt was also a spice. They put it on their food too, to make it taste good. Salt is a very delightful spice. It makes tasteless food come alive with flavor. Sonia made me some homemade soup the other day. She's a great cook, by the way, and everything she makes is good to me. But it had lots of beef and lots of vegetables. And she brought me the bowl of hot soup, and I tasted the first spoonful, and something just wasn't right. I don't know whether she forgot to salt or didn't put enough or whatever it was. But there wasn't much taste to it. It was kind of bland. And I went to fetch the salt shaker. And when I salted it, the whole thing came alive with flavor. You ever done that? And Christians are the salt of the earth. There is something very boring and bland and tasteless about sinners and about this world. Sin gets repetitive and boring. Sinners have to constantly find new sins. The old ones get boring. People in this world lose interest in life very quickly. If only they knew that a little dash of Christianity would spice up the soup of life. There's nothing more exciting than the first spoonful full of soup spiced up with a little salt. And you say, wow, this is really good. Life is really exciting and zesty. Life just tastes good with Jesus in your heart. Let me just say here, I wouldn't trade places with one lost sinner in this world. I'll take my cup of soup any day and they can have theirs. By the way, it doesn't take much salt to spice things up either, does it? In fact, a little too much salt is not really good. You don't have to pour the whole box of Christianity into a man's soup at one time. Just a kind word sometimes is plenty. One woman simply touched the hem of Jesus' garment, and that was enough for her. Just sprinkle the salt of Christianity a little at a time, from day to day. That is all it takes to spice up this bland tasting world. My goodness, I'm running out of time. Haven't even gotten to the second analogy, so let me just briefly cover that. The second analogy is you are the light of the world. Just as you are the salt of the earth, you are also the light of the world. What does that imply? That implies that the world is in darkness, right? And this is certainly true. The world is in a dark stupor. It does not have any spiritual sense whatsoever. If I can say it very bluntly, the world is spiritually stupid. And that's giving it too much credit. Of course, you know that the world is dead because of sins. It has no life whatsoever. Everything is dark to a dead man, isn't it? The coroner pulls the eyelids down over the eyes and it's dark. And the world is in a deep spiritual blackness. They have no understanding. They have no perception. And the world staggers around in the darkness of unbelief. But there is a little light in this world. And it is you. It's Dana Baker, John Dunn, Robert, Joe, Dan, others. You are the light of the world. This world will never see until we come into the room. It's pitch black. But when we come in, suddenly they say, "Oh, I see what life is all about." Don't underestimate your great value in this world. You are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Would you bow with me, please?